We've done that. It's always nice to be here because it's always kind of a Pentecostal moment. I see tons of fire, I'll let you know. So first of all, I'm not part of any of these four congregations officially, but it's been really an honor for me and a joy to be here. When I first moved to New Mexico from Louisville to seminary in 1996, Jim Colley said, why don't you go up and preach in Cuba, because they need someone. So my first acquaintance with the Presbytery of Santa Fe in a meaningful way was preaching up in Cuba in 96, 97, and driving my Geo Metro when there was no passing lane. But it was really, that's where I got welcomed with the hospitality and the warmth, and they graciously accepted me with patience as I learned what it was like to be in Philadelphia and New Mexico. Yuma Springs, it's another thing. When I first came here, Jim Colley, who had a place up there, said, look, because I was the dorm parent at Manal School, that's my regular gig. He said, here, you're going to need to get away, so here's keys to my cabin. And I went up there, and I remember I was up in a hot spring up there, and the snow flurry started. And I said, can there be any place more beautiful than this entire planet than to be here? And actually, I got tears in my eyes. This is incredibly beautiful. And then Rio Rancho, boy, I love being out there. Thank you for the invitations to preach. It's like family. And I've never spent much time in Tocitas, but through Henry, who's an Emmanuel with me, so what can I say? So again, so I feel close to all of your congregations. As I said, my regular times is at Manal School, and people sometimes come to me and say, aren't you going to retire? It's like, are you kidding me? I'm having too much fun. So let's continue that today. So turning to the scripture for today, for this World Communion Sunday, from the Gospel of Mark, some Pharisees came to test him, and they asked, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife? And Jesus answered them, what did Moses command you? That's what's in the lectionary for today. Jesus is talking about divorce, and really, I guess I could try to be creative and get a World Communion message out of divorce, but I'm going to try to untie that Gordian knot. So, really, to me, I'm a joyful slave of the lectionary because I'm usually supply preaching and I'll just go to the lectionary. But today, I had the freedom to pick the scripture. And I chose Isaiah 35 in this passage from John. And Takako, thank you for reading that. Just for you, that beautiful passage from Isaiah, what jumped out at you? What ideas, what images? Water in the wilderness. Way of the Lord. It's just such beautiful poetry. It never gets old. That's one of my favorite chapters in all of Scripture. Just the imagery, the language. And another reason that I think it's so meaningful to me is because when I was a college student in New Haven, and I was going to the United Church on the Green, they don't have Presbyterians in Connecticut, so I went to the UCC. Well, I guess there's some, but I was in the choir there, and we sang an anthem by Samuel Spencer Coyne Wesley of that text, the wilderness and the solitary place shall be dry for them. It was so beautiful, and it's been with me, so I can't hear that scripture without hearing that music. When I hear that music, not only is the beauty of the poetry, but once again, I'm 19 years old in that choir loft, and just beginning my study of religious studies and what it means to be a young person with a whole future ahead of them. Just singing in that choir was just a beautiful memory. But we're going to focus today on that passage from the Gospel according to John. That chapter, you know, chapter 20 ends with Jesus did a lot more things than this that don't need to be written about. You know, this is it, and now, you know, this is all you need to know. But then you get to chapter 21, it's like Paul Harvey, but not for the rest of the story. Chapter 20 seems like that should be the end. But then 21's added on, and we're not going to get into whether it was part of the original gospel or not. It's there. So where it comes in is, the last time we've seen it is Jesus with his disciples, you know, and Thomas in that dramatic scene. But now it's, we don't know how much time has passed. And his disciples are out back to their day job, to their night jobs. They're out fishing. So whether it's been a day or a week, a couple of months, who knows? It's daybreak, and the sunlight is breaking over the sea, and these tired fishermen, they've been out all night, and they've caught nothing. This is their livelihood. So they come back probably frustrated and disappointed, I mean, they're probably thinking to themselves, you know, back in the day, we used to bring in so much fish. Just not like that anymore. The Romans and all their rich friends, they've overfished the lake. You know, boy, memories of the way it used to be. And then some stranger calls from the shore, about a football field away. Hey guys, no luck? Catch anything? Nope. Now is he some competitive, another fisher person who's trying to taunt them and say, look how much I got? Or is it a potential customer who's trying to get the good catch? Or is it maybe just someone who's just curious, how's the fishing today? Catch anything? Nope. Why don't you try the right side of the boat? Cast your nets over there. Now, to me, the oddest part of the story is they do that. Like, who are you? We don't have a fish, but they do it. And what's he know? Well, guess what? It worked. And the beloved disciple, the disciple that Jesus loved, perhaps recalling the abundance of wine at a wedding, with thousands of people fed with so little, he knows who it is. It's the Lord. And then they get to the shore, you know, Peter was, you know, had enough decency to put some clothes on. And they get to the shore, and it's already laid out. There's already bread. There's already fish on the fire. And Jesus says, hey, bring some of that extra fish that you just caught. Come, have breakfast. I love this. Part of it is in my classroom, I have one of those, you know, beautiful art book with Christ for different cultures. And one is a picture, it comes from the Caribbean, of Jesus, you know, he's there like in Bermuda shorts and a Hawaiian shirt, like a straw hat and shades, just hanging out on the beach with his disciples. So when I read this story, that's what I see. It's a beach party. And where's Gidget? We're all here. So purposely making old references. Doing it on purpose. Actually showed that when all blood, we just got two students from Anguilla. Does anybody know Anguilla? It's an island in the Caribbean, which is still part of the UK. It's one of the imperial members. We're from Montserrat. I showed them this picture. They like it. Basketball players. And I also have good memories because they said, oh, you need to come to Montserrat, you know, you need to come see us. And I was fortunate, I was in grad school. Before that, I did spend 6 weeks at the University of the West Indies in Kingston. And I met to Martinique, so good memories of the Caribbean. Well, if I'm here talking about, oh, I remember my time on the beach in Jamaica, I'm talking about when I was in Martinique, I'm purposely sharing some of these wistful memories. Because I think it's like I'm looking around, I would trust most of us, have reached that age where we're kind of chronic reminiscers. We can't help it. It's like the occasional ache and pain and the need for these. It just comes. In some ways, the past seems more real than what's happening now. And it's always intrusive. Boy, do I have to keep reminding myself in class saying, when I was in high school, no, stop it. They don't care. Okay. It doesn't make any difference. When I was a kid, we couldn't eat in the classroom. Okay, it doesn't make any difference. But this, the aches and pains, the reminiscing, we have memories inhabited by family and friends and places that in many ways are just long gone. We know what the word for this is, this aching and longing. It's a poem of nostalgia.
It's called death.
It literally means an aching or yearning for home. That we're far away from home. And I think the older we get and the more things change, the more we get a sense that the past is our comfortable home. And we all do it, particularly now when you hear, you know, when we look to the past, our political culture, our view of the country, the world. And I was just talking to my sister last night. Don't you miss full service shoe stores where they come in with that thing and measure your feet? You know, instead of going to the boxes, you know, going to a clothing store, it's like, sir, may I help you? Or full service, can I check your oil? Can I do you? You know, we were just used to that. And sometimes, you know, when I'm Perry Mason, where it's all wrapped up in an hour, I don't need too much of Netflix. So we know if we do it after an hour. But this nostalgia, is it a good thing or a bad thing? It's both. course we look to the past, and there's comfort in that. So I'm saying, hey, remember that old TV show? Remember when we used to go out to dinner at that place? It's fine. It's good. It's healthy. It's a comfortable place. That's why I do like my old reruns or certain foods, which is like, man, this tastes just like when I was growing up. But you know, it's pretty dangerous. And studies have shown that Americans are indulging in nostalgia more than ever before. Even the younger generation, they think it's cool to have a flip phone. Because they think, they're looking back to a simpler time before their phones took over our lives. But there's a dark side. Ken Burns, who I think you know, is a historian, he says it's a strategic oversimplification of the past. Which could possibly be a party platform, but I won't get into that. This is a safe place. And sometimes we need a little oversimplification, but without going to the limit, what's the problem with nostalgia? With nostalgia can lead to a certain stagnation. We cling to the past, or we idealize. The past was so wonderful. Remember when the churches were full and the choir had 150 people, that's how many fish there were. So, it was just so wonderful. And to realize, if you look at American church history, actually the 50s and 60s were the aberration with the packed churches. Okay, but we glorify it. That's the way it's always been. It's so wonderful. So we idealize the past and we compare it the way it is now, whether because our physical health or just the way the world is, and we idealize the past, we compare the past to the present, it makes us unhappy, and we can use it for escapism. Nostalgia can be a problem. This was driven home to me also because I'm from Philadelphia, so sometimes when people ask me, are you ready to retire? It's like, no. And then they find out where I'm from, so you're going to go back to Philadelphia? And it's like, But then I say, of course not. I went back like 3 or 4 years ago, and it being Philadelphia, frankly, most of the buildings that were there when I was there are still there. It hasn't changed that much. So I can walk the streets, and it looks like it did when I was a teenager in my 20s, when I went to Penn and when I worked downtown. But what would be the point of going back? That's not home anymore. Part of me feels like it is, but it's not. Anybody who I was close to, that I loved, they're either gone or they moved on. You know, my mother always gave that Thomas Wolfe quote, you can't go home again. So I did. I took the trolley that I used to take to high school, and I walked up the hill, and I guess I can't believe that house still has a lawn jockey out front. The face has been painted white over the black body. It's like, I can't believe how little much hasn't changed, but it's not the same. This is home for me now. This is home. So that nostalgia has come full circle. Let me just read this brief passage by an author named Joshua Milburn. So he's going back to Dayton, Ohio, not Philadelphia. And he writes, when I traveled back to Dayton last month on a quick break from my tour, I felt revived by waves of nostalgia as I maneuvered through my hometown. Walking the downtown streets amid towering buildings glimmering in the summer sun, driving the outskirts of town through cornfields so green they appeared radioactive, passing my childhood home, inhaling the memories of my adolescence. But there's a problem with nostalgia. It tells only half-truths, and thus the full truth isn't as fragrant as my wistful reminiscence. Most of the skyscrapers are abandoned. The cornfields are subsumed by cookie-cutter suburbia, and the house that raised me is boarded up decades after decades of disrepair. Nostalgia is a rose-colored rear view. Not only does it falsely represent the past, keeping us clinging to a two-dimensional version of life that didn't actually exist, it dampens the present and clouds the future. He concludes, if we want things to be the way they were, or if we hope to make something great again, then we're missing out on how good this moment is. How good this moment is, and how great the future can be. Don't get me wrong, I still love my hometown, not for what it used to be, for what it is right now, and for what the future holds. And this is the good news for us here, gathered together in this place. This is a good moment. We're gathered here together in this beautiful corner of God's creation, balloons in the air, and we've brought our own food just like the disciples brought some fish to the table. By the way, if you want to make this a real biblical experience, I've got a can of sardines. Without the opener, don't worry, I'm going to stick it up. But as it's done, the table has already been set. We're coming, and it's already here, but you can bring more. It's abundance. We know that after this meal, Jesus gives the disciples, he says, feed my sheep, and they're getting this commission to continue. Keep throwing out those nets. And that's our mission. Now we come together at the table of the Lord, and of course there's some nostalgia. We know who's no longer here. Friends and loved ones and pastors who have been here before. So of course we look back. And in many ways we feel that our nets are not as full and that we're in desert wilderness places. But the risen Lord calls us to an abundant table and an even more abundant future. Everlasting joy shall be upon our heads. We shall obtain joy and gladness. Sorrow and sighing shall indeed flee away. Come, it's still morning. Come, have breakfast. Thank you.